This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
In the meantime, this month marks the 75th anniversary of the Bretton Woods Agreement. Now, in 1944, during World War II, the representatives of the Allied nations met in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, to set out the global monetary and financial order that would apply when the war ended.
This Bretton Woods Agreement led to the creation of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, which are key institutions in the international financial landscape today.
So for some thoughts on the impact of the Bretton Woods system, we turn to Professor Raja Hrasya, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute at the University of Malaya. Thank you for joining us, Professor. So help us understand the context under which the Bretton Woods Agreement and the birth of these two institutions came about. Why were they created in the first place?
Yeah, they were conceived in 1944 with the purpose of, one, the World Bank itself taking care of long-term capital investments, especially so when the focus with the World Bank originally was on reconstruction. The bank is also known as the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. And since they were already sure that they were going to win against their Axis powers of Germany and Japan, the meeting was there in 1944. And subsequently, the World Bank was born in 1945, and of course, the IMF in 1946. The purpose of the IMF was to address external imbalances as well as to stabilize exchange rates. Those were the main reasons why these organizations were created. Now, the main orchestrator, John Maynard Keynes, refused to visit them simply because he didn't want those two organizations to be located in the U.S. Although the meeting was in New Hampshire, the organizations were started in Washington.
And Professor, what is your assessment of the needs of the global economy today? Are these institutions fit for purpose?
Let's contrast what the purpose was then. I think it was really necessary that long-term capital was available to reconstruct countries that were destroyed by the war. And at the same time, because you had other countries helping these countries against the Axis powers to bring about development in these countries. That was the purpose of World Bank. The IMF itself was there in order to ensure that whenever countries face and still now facing debt service problems as well as current account plus long-term account deficits, what together we call balance of payment deficits, then the IMF's main role and then and now is the role of lender of last resort, which means to say when countries default, they are not able to pay deficits incurred because of current account deficits as well as unable to service their debt, then IMF comes in to address these problems. Now, of course, the IMF for a long time and in many cases still continue to have this one-size-fits-all sort of an approach. When countries face such defaults, the IMF obviously comes and tells them that they've been over-consuming. They have to tighten their belts. That would mean raising interest rates, reducing all kinds of expenditures, floating their currencies. In some ways, as was seen in the Asian financial crisis, at the disadvantage of those countries forced to borrow from these countries under the Structural Adjustment Program. Now, coming back to your main point about whether they're still relevant now, of course, there is still a need, not so much for the developed countries because they no longer have this problem of having to reconstruct themselves, but more so for the developing countries. One may have to ask how much role World Bank really plays in ensuring that these so-called least developed countries are on the way to developing. That's one. Now, in relation to the IMF itself, you still have problems with debt service, especially short-term debt service. And you still have countries that somehow face explosions in financial markets, see that the exchange rates collapse, and with that, the capacity to service the imports become difficult. Now, that role is still important. The thing that is important for me is, are they performing these roles well? I would say no. I think to a large extent, the one-size-fits-all approach has remained.
So, Professor,
yes.
Then what kind of reforms do you think are necessary for the World Bank and IMF to maintain its relevance?
I think they need to remove one ideologues there, people who tend to feel that without a real feel of actual markets, without a real feel of firms, who simply assume that so long as you have uncertainties and risks going up, because countries have come to a point of on the brink of being unable to service their debt or will end up facing a debt overhang, they end up telling them simply to tighten up the belts. And therefore, their focus must be on raising interest rates and then floating their currencies. Now, when you float a currency, the national currency would fall, and the fall in the currency would obviously lead to a reduction in imports, because import prices will become expensive. And likewise, when interest rates go up, it will tend to restrict people from borrowing. Now, these two things will have that desired effect of reducing inflows, of reducing inflows of goods and services. But at the same time, it has this debilitating effect of destroying national firms, including foreign firms located there.
Right.
So I think the reforms that we are talking about should come the way state capital controls were introduced in Malaysia, and of course also in the 80s in Chile. Some way of ensuring that there's stability in the flow of capital.
Thank you, Professor. And that was Professor Rajah Rasiah, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute at the University of Malaya. And he does believe that some reforms are necessary in order to ensure that the World Bank and the IMF basically keep up with the times. Because although, you know, if you take a look at just how global inequality has decreased over the few decades since the World Bank and the IMF came into power, it has been successful in that respect. Because, for example, the share of the world's population that lived on less than $2 a day at 2011 purchasing power parity levels, that declined from about 75% in 1950 to 10% in 2015. But nevertheless, the world is changing, and you're seeing the rise of protectionist measures and slightly more populist political moves. So whether or not the World Bank and the IMF will be able to keep up with these shifts in global trends, that's going to be the question. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.